dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I'll be guiding you around the battlefield of the war of ideas. We'll be discussing several subjects of very important priority at the moment. Specifically, we'll be talking about China with our friend Gordon Chang. He is a regular here on Mondays, and we're delighted to have two segments with him to do a post-mortem on President Hu's visit and an extraordinary bit of back of the hand that was delivered to the President of the United States in the course of the state dinner. We'll get into that and where this relationship is headed. What in particular is the role of U.S. business in all of this, for good or for ill? That and much, much more with Gordon Chang in segments one and two. Segment three, we have our colleague and friend Douglas Murray back from across the pond joining us to talk about Quentin Witterowitz, new addition to the National Security Council staff of President Obama, a man who, it appears, is substantially clueless about the nature of the threat we're facing from Sharia. We'll be talking about that with Douglas based on experiences that he's had with this chap on the other side of the Atlantic. And then finally, Herb London, president of the Hudson Institute, a revered colleague, will be talking with us about what Sharia means for Christianity in various parts of the world, including in Egypt and in Pakistan, and therefore what it means for us, and the advisability or recklessness of disarming, as some would have us do in the face of this and so many other dangers. But first up, we're going to be talking at some length, I'm happy to say, with Gordon Chang, and I'm always happy to have you with us, Gordon. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Frank.
So give us the backstory on what happened at the state dinner. How did this come about, and what's the takeaway from it, certainly for the Chinese?
Certainly, this was a slap. Concert pianist Lang Lang played a song, My Motherland, or sometimes interpreted as My Country, which is a theme in a Korean War era movie in China. Essentially, the song and the movie celebrates killing Americans. This was part of a group of songs that Lang Lang played at the state dinner on Wednesday night. Clearly, there was a failure of staff work at the Obama administration, but the real story is just the disrespect that Beijing is showing the United States.
Is there any way, Gordon Chang, that the president's party coming in from China could have been ignorant of what this performer was going to do and the nature of the song that he was going to perform?
Clearly, the Chinese knew about the song beforehand because they would have been informed by the Obama administration what the entertainment for the evening was. The issue here is whether Lang Lang himself knew about whether he told the Chinese government beforehand. We don't have clear evidence on that. But one thing we do know, and that is that the attitude that would convince him to play this song really is part of the propaganda that the Chinese inculcate in all of their children in the mainland from the very beginning. So clearly this is, you know, Beijing has its hand in this, and they could have stopped it. When informed by the Obama administration that this was going to occur, they could have said, hey, wait a minute, this is not really a good idea. We don't want to send this message. But clearly President Hu wanted to show himself as strong, and dissing the United States was one way to do that.
Yeah. And I guess that's what I wanted to go to next with you, Gordon Chang, who you see, of course, at Fox News quite frequently. You will also read his marvelous columns at Forbes.com. You will be able to pick him up each Monday here at Secure Freedom Radio as well. Gordon, is what is going on in terms of the minds of the Chinese? There was a report this morning to the effect that the Chinese have, as usual, closely monitored and scrubbed the reporting, the internet traffic, and so on in China about the visit, and that what's come across is very much this kind of what a marvelous job President Hu did asserting China's peer status, and some, you know, even going beyond that to gloat about this this nationalist affront. What do you think the Chinese government is making of all of this, and what might that portend?
President Hu came to the United States not really to engage us on substantive issues, and clearly there are a lot of them. He came here for the television images to be beamed back to China of the state dinner, of the 21-gun salute, all the pomp and ceremony, because what he wants to do is to show America's respect for the Communist Party. So from Hu's point of view, this was clearly an exercise in legitimization. And he noticed that President Hu got President Obama to invite Xi Jinping, who is slated to be Hu Jintao's successor as General Party Secretary and as President, to come to the United States. That's further legitimization of the transfer of power, and we've become sort of a willing party in helping the Communist Party maintain itself. This really is wrong.
Yeah, that's a very interesting insight, Gordon, because I think that most commentators are talking, if they are thinking about this at all, about legitimating Hu as an individual. What you've just pointed to is that this is actually bigger than that. This is about helping to affirm the preeminence of the Communist Party at the moment that it's heading into a possibly messy succession transition. Is that right?
Absolutely. This is a succession which has been slated out. Xi Jinping is supposed to take over. And, you know, the slate of candidates is more or less known, but these types of transitions where you go from one generation of leaders to the next, from the fourth to the fifth in this case, can go off the rails. And Chinese leaders are very concerned about it because there's a lot of protest, and some of it very violent in China. There's perhaps maybe more than 200,000 protests in China at this moment. And so essentially what the Communist Party wants to do is to maintain sort of a smooth transition, and they're employing the Obama administration for this purpose.
Yeah, and this is really a stunning revelation. 200,000 protests, riots, whatever, going on in communist China at any given moment is really a stunning evidence of something you've written about for years, Gordon Chang, namely the prospect of a collapse of communist China. And we're going to have you for a second in a segment here, and we'll talk more about all this after the break. But before we go, just in the remaining minute, tell us as this transition plays out, Gordon, what your thinking is on the role that the People's Liberation Army, the Chinese military, is playing. How decisive a factor will that be? Is there daylight between them and the party?
There's a very large military influence at the moment. This is a trend which we saw from around 2002, 2003, when Hu Jintao, the current leader, was sort of helping, trying to get the military to help him do away with his predecessor, Jiang Zemin, who was trying to linger in the limelight. So Hu has given in to the military, giving them bigger budgets, giving them more influence over certain parts of foreign policy. And so we're seeing the same dynamic now in the next transition, when Hu Jintao is leaving and Xi Jinping is supposed to be taking over. So the military is going to expand its influence over the Chinese political system.
Yeah, and that can't be good for us, because these guys are clearly feeling their oats. Their ambitions to assert their power, not just throughout the region, but I think worldwide, is likely to be an increasing problem for us. And Gordon, we'll visit about that a little bit more on the other side of the break, but I did want to put the marker down. We are looking at a time of transition, and the United States' role, perhaps as a legitimator of those in this Communist Party structure, is potentially quite problematic indeed. Gordon Chang is our guest. He will be staying with us, and we will be hopefully staying with you for a few minutes further conversation about the Chinese bubble. What will happen for us if it bursts? Straight ahead.
You're You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy. Eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hands can do incredible things. This is the sound of 326 hands playing Mozart. This is the sound of 10,942 hands showing appreciation. 64 hands building a house for the homeless. 142 hands swimming a triathlon. 18 hands winning the big game. And this is the sound of two hands helping to save a life. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's incredibly easy and effective. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
This is the greatest country in the world. Every day, people in America live in 100% freedom. Our military allows us to do that. It's comforting to know that when American lives are lost in defense of our freedom, an organization like TAPS is there to help the friends and families of those who have died while serving our country.
TAPS, the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. Visit us online at TAPS.org or call 1-800-959-TAPS.
Hello and welcome to today's lottery drawing. Good luck. And here's today's winning numbers. First one up, it's not yours. Second one, not yours. And another number that's not yours. Okay, this is one number that's yours. It's a 5, but you don't get any money for that. And the final number is not yours.
Yep, so chances are you're not going to hit the lottery anytime soon. Don't get us wrong. The lottery can be fun every now and then. Just please don't rely on it for your future savings. How about this? Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte every day. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Ride your bike instead of buying all that gas. These changes alone can save you thousands a year. Thousands. Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow. Feed that piggy bank. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined once again by Gordon Chang, our duty expert on China, doing a postmortem on the visit of President Hu to Washington and Chicago. And Gordon, I want to talk a little bit about what went on after Hu Jintao left Washington, as well as some of the perhaps agreements that were struck while he was in town. A major theme of the visit, of course, was that the relationship between China and the United States is important, to be sure, but to some extent, the kinds of accommodations that we make are justified because we need China's help, not only with respect to Iran and with respect to North Korea and other trouble spots, you know, pirates off the Somali coast and like, but because of the importance of trade between the two nations. And I'd like you to just talk a little bit about what role business is playing, American business is playing in promoting relations between the two countries on terms that actually might not be good either for our national security or for business.
American business has traditionally carried the water for China. And so China has not really had to go out and spend that much on lobbying, because you had the Boeings and the General Electrics and the Caterpillars doing all of this for Beijing. Recently, the last couple of years, there has been a hesitation on the part of business. They're not exactly sitting on their hands, but they're not cheerleaders either, and they are concerned. And one of the things that Hu Jintao has been sponsoring has really gotten American business upset, and that is the indigenous innovation product accreditation rules. And basically, these rules force the transfer of very valuable technology to Chinese joint ventures, where the Chinese control them, if American companies or any foreign companies want to do business with the Chinese government. This is government procurement, which is really important because you have most of the major players state-owned or state-controlled. And so American business has become very upset about this. They've lobbied the Obama administration, which has raised the issue with China. I think that we need to actually give this an even higher priority, because the administration, to its credit, has been concerned about this. But clearly, we need to stop the transfer of technology where it is really being forced by Beijing rather than more voluntary on the part of companies. So this is an important issue.
And I guess I just would be interested in sort of a, and obviously this is a high order of magnitude kind of assessment, Gordon Chang, but to what extent do you believe that what we're dealing with in this sort of indigenous accreditation business, a systematic plundering of those companies that have agreed to do business with China on those terms? And what would that mean, not just for the economic well-being of the United States, but, as I say, for national security as well?
Clearly, national security is going to be affected, because we're talking about the transfer of up-to-date technology. The China has sort of figured it can do this. American companies figure, well, they can develop new technology after they transfer the old ones. But clearly, the Chinese have been able to master and actually jump the technological scale very quickly, because they have gotten this technology one way or another, by hook or crook. So this is a national security issue, especially since the Obama administration is thinking of relaxing technology controls. Remember, one of the things that China has been at the top of its agenda for the last year or so has been relaxing U.S. export restrictions on high technology. This is really very important.
And Gordon, let's drill down on that, because this was one of the things that, as I understand it, was touted as a very positive outcome of the summit, was that the president felt that he had extracted from the Chinese a commitment to make more investments in the United States. And the Chinese presumably were gratified by his promises, as you say, to facilitate the transfer of American technology, or at least easing of restrictions on the transfer of American technology to China. To the extent that the Chinese are using their money to buy up in a very strategic way companies that have this technology, to the extent, as you say, that most of those big players in China are state-owned or state-controlled, including by the People's Liberation Army, and to the extent that we would see the relatively few constrictions that are still in place on sophisticated technology that could be militarily relevant being eased in a way that would allow the Chinese to expropriate still more of this stuff, this sounds like a very dubious outcome, again, from a point of view of both our commercial well-being and our national security.
Clearly, the one thing that is really a concern is that this administration, like the one before it, was really pretty lax on allowing Chinese acquisitions of small American companies that had very valuable technology, some of it with military implications. And we just allowed this to occur. So essentially what we need is both parties to sort of, as you say, drill down, think about this, and prevent the transfer of technology by acquisition. There are other ways the Chinese acquire technology. They're all problematic. But clearly the one that we can do something about really easily is to prevent the acquisition of American companies.
Yeah. Well, as you say, one of the other ways that they do it is they just steal it. That is kind of problematic indeed. I think we could probably do something about that as well. But you're right. We've got to be at least attentive to the inadvisability of strengthening a potential adversary, and I'm think there's no doubt that's what we're up to. Gordon, let me close out. We've got a couple of minutes left. On this question of, is there a bubble that China represents, kind of this huge enterprise, if you will, that is growing by leaps and bounds, but some are beginning to say it's unsustainable and that there is a day of reckoning coming, maybe sooner rather than later. What is your take on that?
The United States took its medicine after the 2008 global downturn. The Chinese didn't. What they did was they put about $1.1 trillion in stimulus in their $4.7 trillion economy in 2009, and that's created the asset bubbles and the inflation, and that's really the bubble problem. They've got very serious problems on dealing with the consequences of too much growth because they put too much money into their economy, more than it could ever absorb, and that's why inflation in reality is probably above 10% right now, and that's a very serious problem for China's poor because food is becoming much too expensive for them to afford. So, yes, they've got serious problems right now.
And, Gordon, when we look at the data that China produces, 10%, 11% growth rates, should we take that with a grain of salt? People are reminded of some of the communist data, or for that matter, even the data that the CIA generated about the strength of the Soviet economy that was all, you know, a house of cards. Is there reason to believe that they're cooking the books as well as allowing sort of conditions to be created here that are likely to cause real social unrest and perhaps a great dislocation beyond the 200,000 protests that you're saying are going on now?
They're cooking the books. I'm not sure they're cooking the gross domestic product numbers, because China does have robust growth. What they're cooking are the inflation numbers, which are the most politically sensitive. They said that inflation in December was 4.6%. It's probably more than twice that, because that is the one number that the Chinese government is really concerned about.
And is it, in your estimation, the case that if they are allowed to cook the books in the way that they are on inflation, that they could, in fact, fail to take the sorts of steps that are going to be necessary to keep that inflation in check? And what would the implications be for that for both their internal stability? Are we, in fact, now seeing the collapse you've been forecasting for some time being brought forward? And what would it mean for the kind of bilateral ties, economic particularly, that we have with them, and for that matter, the economy more generally? Very quickly, I need a minute on that global question. I apologize.
Yeah, the Chinese people know that there's really serious inflation. You can't censor the fact that they're paying much more at the vegetable stand. That's going to be a real problem for China right now, and that is, yeah, they can fool around with their numbers, but they can't fool the Chinese people. And global investors are pretty negative because they can understand what's going on as well.
Yeah, and as that persists, presumably, we will find more and more, I imagine, people taking to the streets, demanding relief, and we'll see very, very quickly, I imagine, further evidence of what that means for the stability of China and why they're playing so hard to get the Communist Party legitimated by people like Barack Obama. We'll be following all of this, needless to say, with you closely, Gordon Chang. I thank you, as always, for your great insights and for taking two segments with us today. We'll be talking with you again next week. Next up, we've got Douglas Murray coming up on the new guy on the block at the National Security Council. Is he as clueless as he seems about Sharia? And what will that mean for you? Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Can I have a price check on aisle... ma'am?
Yeah.
Don't look down, but there's a giant python wrapped around your leg.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's probably nothing.
Nothing? Shouldn't I don't know, like, call someone?
No, I don't have the time. I'm late as it is. If it keeps up, I'll have it looked at.
Are you sure? That's a pretty big snake.
No, I'm fine. Thank you, though. You're very sweet.
You wouldn't ignore this, so why ignore the signs of a stroke? If you or someone you know suddenly experiences numbness of the face, arm, or leg, or sudden trouble speaking, seeing, or walking, don't wait to get help. call 911 right away, because time lost is brain lost. To find out more, visit www.strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE. This message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This morning, a woman reached out. A man stepped up. A family drove their elderly neighbor to the doctor. Someone took 2 hours of their morning to help someone else find affordable childcare near work. Somebody sat down with 16-year-old Stephen and taught him better note-taking skills and study habits, and suddenly, toughing it out till graduation seemed to Stephen a pretty good idea. All this happened today. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening here, there, right down the street. People are living united. We're not just wearing the shirt, we're living it. We're realizing that the way we live our lives can impact the way others live theirs, their education, their income, even their health. So do something, any little something, as long as it's something. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Radio that improves your chances for survival in a dangerous world. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Make Facebook your source for essential national security analysis. Search for Frank Gaffney and add him to your friends list.
Welcome back. We are joined for this segment by Douglas Murray, one of our distinguished friends and go-to guys when it comes to understanding the threat posed to all of us by what some call radical Islam. I prefer to describe it as Sharia. Douglas is, of course, the director of the Center for Social Cohesion. We were graced by him last week in connection with other matters, but we have an urgent reason to come back to you today, Douglas Murray, because we've had a new appointment in the Obama National Security Council staff of a gentleman by the name of Dr. Quinton Wichterowitz, who is apparently, on the basis, in part at least, of seminal experiences he had in the United Kingdom, coming to try to apply the lessons he learned as to how brilliantly Britain has been dealing with the insinuation of Sharia into its country, so as to better defend us against these radical Muslims who wish to kill us. And I just thought it would be useful to touch base with you on in light of all of this, as to just, first of all, after a proper welcome, needless to say, but first of all, how well do you think Britain really is doing in this space? And should we be trying to emulate your experiences here in the hands of Quentin Wutsagrowis or otherwise?
Well, very good to be with you, Frank, and your listeners as always. The first thing is, no, Britain would be the worst place that I would expect anyone to go to for advice in this matter. Quentin Viktorovits is somebody who used to be at the US Embassy here in London, and who promoted, as I understand it, within the embassy there, this idea that the way to counter radical, violent, extreme Islam, radical jihadism, call it what you want, is to get a type of Islamism which is not currently violent, although it is ideologically radical. It's something like the idea that was propagated in Iraq a few years ago, the so-called Sunni awakening, whereby you need to get radical people who are not actively currently performing acts of terrorism in order to get the people who are committing such acts of terrorism out of the way. Now, there was a very compelling reason to do that in Iraq a few years ago, a very compelling reason indeed, with car bombs going off all the time. But there is not a compelling reason, in the views of some of us, to do that in 2011 in Britain or the US, because we're not at that stage. We aren't actually on our knees as countries begging one type of extremist to be taken as a moderate, because it's the only bulwark we might have against people about to set off car bombs.
Yes.
It's an extraordinary misjudgment, to give it its most charitable interpretation. And it is, however, something that the British government, among others, has pursued in recent years. And to take, for America to take the lesson from that, from the NSC to go down that route, is an extraordinary step backwards.
Yeah. Douglas Murray is our guest from the Center for Social Cohesion, which he founded and directs in Britain. Douglas, you know, to try to bring this to a little bit more of an American audience's, you know, sort of compass, it's as though one might say, you know, we've got this terrible problem with the Ku Klux Klan that is engaged in violent acts of terror and worse against black people. And we really must do something about this. And the way we're going to do something about this is by making common cause with David Duke, who apparently is not violent, as you say, at the moment, but nonetheless completely embraces the agenda, the program, the belief systems of the KKK. I've got to say, it just is mind-boggling that at no point, evidently, and I'm going in part, Douglas, in addition to what you've said on the basis of an interview that was, or rather a news report that was broadcast by the National Public Radio here in the United States this morning, in which this fellow was given a marvelous send-up. So, man who's had a brilliant insight that if only we really recruit those who are most orthodox in their practice of Sharia, They will in fact serve as this bulwark against, you know, the KKK equivalents. And so in your experience in Britain with this chap, I know there was one instance in which you in particular found him making a most ill-advised recommendation to the U.S. ambassador. Tell us about that.
Absolutely, because this isn't merely, as it were, equivalent. It's a very good comparison you give with the David Duke situation. It isn't as though civil society and the government were to be recommending David Duke's form of racism over another kind. It's that they actually give their own imprint to this idea. It isn't as if they merely don't condemn David Duke. It's as if they gave him money and pushed his version of his own racist ideology. Because what Quentin Viktorovits, one of the things that he was involved in London, as I understand it, was the visit of the American ambassador earlier this year to the East London Mosque. Now, the East London Mosque is an extremely controversial institution in Britain. The East London Mosque, among other things, in recent years, they weren't behind it, it was an outside group who organized it and so on, but have hosted talks by Anwar al-Awlaki, currently most famous for being on a kill or capture order from President Obama. Now, the East London Mosque has not merely done that in recent years. There have been numerous occasions on which it has hosted exceedingly unpleasant, to put it at its mildest, figures, extremist figures. And that institution is the sort of place that anyone in any position of authority should keep a million miles from. It's a demonstration of the problems we have in Britain today, that unfortunately not only has the Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, visited the OM, but so has Prince Charles, rather inevitably, one might say. But to have the American ambassador going to the East London Mosque and giving the American administration in Washington's effective imprint to this dreadful place is really a demonstration of how you fail. Because the American government shouldn't take a view on the sort of thing. It shouldn't want to be near this sort of thing. Even if it isn't actively attacking and criticizing such an institution, it shouldn't go within a million miles of it.
Yes.
And instead, you have, because of people like Viktorovits who think they understand this and they know this better than anybody else, you have this situation that effectively what should be a nut job fringe wacky organization that sometimes does very wicked and very dangerous things becomes mainstream. And who in that situation could look at a better example of how you actually create extremists? The best way to create extremists is to legitimize extreme institutions and say to anyone who isn't like that, well, you know what? If you joined up with those guys, not only would you get a royal visit, you'd get an American ambassadorial visit. What a mug it would be not to fall for that.
Well, it's stunning, and I'm afraid, as I say, as I say, Douglas Murray, it is extraordinary. It unfortunately, though, seems but a piece of this sort of notion of sort of social science as the way to manage these transnational challenges that we're facing in Afghanistan and elsewhere. But just to follow the logic of this, Douglas, with you for one moment, Anwar Lawaki, you mentioned, a man who is now on our killer capture list because he's running, or at least approving, lending his legitimacy, his religious authority to terrorist attacks, now a series of them against the United States. This is a man who was, until not too long ago, precisely the sort of person that I imagine Quentin Wittorowicz would think we ought to be doing business with, the sorts that would be in that East London mosque, the sort who was in the Dar al-Hijra mosque about, 20 minutes from our seat of government. This is a man who was as dangerous, I would argue, when he was doing his mosque thing as he currently is. It's just a change of venue, absolutely, and his mask is a little bit different. But this is absolutely sort of the rub, isn't it?
This is absolutely two things. Firstly, this is the kind of rubbish, to use a nice four-letter word, this is the type of crap you get if you teach the social sciences agenda that has been taught at American and British universities for the last couple of generations. This is what comes of it. No ability to state your own position, your own virtues, your own values of society, but a great eagerness to wade in half-informed to other people.
Very quickly, the second point. Yeah.
And the second point is this, is that, as you say, if the Viktorovits plan works, then Anwar al-Awlaki would currently be leading some Sufi outreach program for moderate Muslims somewhere in Detroit.
Right.
But he's not. He's on a killer capture list.
That's
because the Viktorovits plan does not work.
Amen. Brilliantly said, and just in time. Thank you so much, Douglas Murray, as always, for your expertise, for joining
Thank
us on
all.
Short notice. We'll look forward to talking with you in the very near future again. Douglas Murray of the
Likewise.
Center for Social Cohesion in London. And from London, we go to Herb London. And coming up next, a little bit more on the social movement theory and what's happening to Christians at the hands of these Sharia adherent types. Straight ahead.
Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call. And I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Fire took place 3 years ago. There was a lightning strike. The winds picked up and the fire just took off. You're in shock. You don't know what you're feeling. You have nothing. I lost my home and 40 years worth of art. I never thought that I would need help from the Red Cross. They gave me emotional support to get up in the morning. I'll never forget what the Red Cross did for me.
Contact your local Red Cross chapter or visit redcross.org.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined for segment four by Herb London. He is the president of the marvelous Hudson Institute. You hear their spots periodically here at Secure Freedom Radio. We are privileged to have them as colleagues, and most especially their highly esteemed leader, Herb London, as a good friend and mentor. And Herb, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's always great to have you with us, especially at a time when work that you've been doing for so many years is really at the forefront. We've just finished talking with Douglas Murray about whether we have a clue, really, about the nature of the enemy we're up against. And Douglas's observation is, don't follow the British model. And we seem to be doing just that a bit, I'm afraid, at the moment. But I wanted to visit with you particularly about the inadvisability of sort of turning a blind eye to what is going on in places like Egypt and Iraq and Sudan and other places where Christians are being murdered in large numbers at the hands of people who adhere to Sharia. Tell us what you make of all of that and what we should be thinking about.
I'm deeply concerned. Let me say at the outset that I'm a great fan of Frank Gaffney and your organization and your radio program. So
well,
it is a privilege to be associated with you. But let me get right to the question. My feeling is that What we are seeing in the world today is an attack, a kind of systematic attack on Christians across the Middle East. You've seen evidence of this in Egypt. You've seen this in Alexandria with a church being attacked. You've seen this with a police officer who was actually walking up and down a train in order to identify people who had little green marks on their arms suggesting that they were cops. You see this with the attacks on Maronites. There is no question that this is somewhat systematic. And while there are obviously a good many Muslims who are embarrassed by this, there are many who feel that this campaign is justifiable. I am deeply concerned about what this means for the Christian community and by the lack of response by the United States and by a great many other Western nations that should be appalled at this kind of behavior.
Yes. Well, and at the moment, we certainly see an administration that is doing little more than tutting about it, far from expressing strong opposition to it. It's hardly noting it at all. Herb, you have been a published author on questions of sort of secularism and in fact one entitled America's Secular Challenge: The Rise of a New National Religion. Do you think that that is contributing to the manifest failures of the United States to this point to understand the nature of a totalitarian ideology that is masquerading as a religion, even when it is engaging in this kind of clearly, you know, religious bigotry and violence?
Well, it's a very interesting question, Frank. My own feeling about this is that when you have a kind of extreme secularism of the kind that we have in the United States and the repudiation of almost any religious idea, it's very, very difficult to see how you can compete against an idea that clearly has a fanatical and monomaniacal approach to its view of the world. So they have, the opposition has a clear idea of what it wants to achieve. We do not. We no longer know what we are defending. We no longer see ourselves in the position of defending Christian civilization, which was the term that the Churchill used during World War II. We no longer understand that the Judeo-Christian tradition has a nexus to the Constitution and the freedoms that we enjoy. When you do not understand that, it becomes very difficult to oppose the kind of fanatical behavior we are now seeing on the world stage.
Yeah, we've talked often here at Secure Freedom Radio, Herb, with you and others about our failing to understand the nature of the enemy, which Sun Tzu has told us, you know, 5,000 years ago, is kind of a showstopper if you're trying to defeat them. But what you've made is the corollary point, which is even in some ways more debilitating, I guess, and that is we don't even know who we are, let alone who the enemy is. And the combination of the two can only be toxic for a society that is, in fact, rooted in Judeo-Christian values and traditions in the face of this kind of adversity. Speaking of which, Herb London, let me ask you about Pakistan. I know you're following at least reasonably closely developments there, including the murder of this governor who had the courage to stand up against one of Sharia's most highly lethal, highly effective techniques for imposing itself on others, namely its blasphemy laws. We've had him killed. We've had now, objections to anybody finding fault with the idea of honor killing and so on. This is in a country that we're endlessly told is an ally and we must give billions of dollars to, and the nuclear weapons are in safe hands and so on. What is going on there, and should this be of concern to us as we look at this kind of larger problem?
Well, here you have a murder that took place, and not only was the murderer an egregious act, but now you find that there are many people who support the murderer, that they throw rose petals
at him. A national hero.
Forum. He becomes a national figure.
Yeah.
Now, this is really quite remarkable. If, in fact, blasphemy laws are as egregious as I suspect they are, then it seems to me that what you should be doing is honoring the man who was murdered, not the person who committed the murder.
Right.
But you have just the opposite in Pakistan at the moment, which suggests to me that no matter what we are trying to do in Pakistan, when you consider the secret police in that country, you consider the armed forces, you consider the real sentiments, it's very difficult to understand how the radical view that exists in Pakistan today can work as an ally of the United States.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and it's deeply worrying as we seem to be, as with, you know, the assaults on Christianity and the blasphemy business, as you know, Herb London, resulted in this gentleman being murdered because he had, in effect, risen to the defense of a Christian woman who is now under a death sentence from the Sharia-driven courts of Pakistan for, you know, having given offense to Muslims in her community, who, as I understand, she was bringing water to. I mean, this is just, it's mind-boggling. Let me switch gears.
Well, she was bringing water to them, and in fact, yeah. She was a Christian. And in fact, Tashir, the person who was murdered, I think, stated quite clearly that this was an abomination, that this could not be tolerated in any civilized society. Yeah. He was stating the obvious, it seems to me. But what you have is a reaction that is really quite remarkable, yes. Suggesting something about the radical and extremist view that I think has gained sway within this country.
Yeah, it's interesting. In the segment before yours, Herb, we were talking, as I mentioned, with Douglas Murray about a piece that you may have heard on NPR, as I did, about this new National Security Council Senior Director for Global Engagement, Quinton Wiktorowicz, who is coming in basically saying, look, the best hope we have is to embrace the guys who, well, let's face it, essentially are imposing blasphemy laws in Pakistan and otherwise working their will elsewhere around the world. But I was struck because by the very next segment that was aired on that National Public Broadcast this morning and morning edition was talking about, you know, how these very folks in Pakistan are clearly taking civilization off the deep end. Herb, we're almost out of time. I want very quickly to just touch on one other thing. You were an incredibly helpful ally in putting together, back before the election, a platform entitled Peace Through Strength. And I just wonder what you make of reports that we're now hearing rather consistently, in fact, statements that are now being made rather consistently by some, including, I'm sorry to say, among the Republican leadership, that it's time to start cutting defense in the midst of these two wars. Quickly, Herb, what should we be thinking and doing on that score?
Well, I think that the United States needs an insurance policy. I mean, we are facing a world that is increasingly complex and where the threats, I think, exist in many different places. We're looking at the J-20 Chinese stealth fighter. We're looking at a blue water navy that is increasingly, I think, a threat to our Asian allies. I think that the United States should not be cutting the defense budget at this time. If anything, we probably need an increase in the defense budget. Now, people are saying we do not have sufficient assets in order to deal with the problems that we're facing on the world stage. I would argue that if we're spending 4.5% of GDP on defense, we certainly can afford that. We've afforded a lot more in the past. We are facing threats of a very real nature. The way to maintain peace in the world is through strength. That strength means that we have the ability to project power when it's necessary to do so. If we are incapable of using our aircraft carriers and our Navy in order to project power, then it seems to me we're putting ourselves in a disadvantageous position. But not only the United States, but also our allies as well, who will be looking across the globe saying, if we can't count on the United States, who can we count on? And I think it is increasing an increasingly destabilizing world. So I am very much concerned about the direction that's being taken, not only by Democrats in this matter, but by some of my Republican allies as well.
Yeah. Well, Herb, you couldn't have said it better and in a more perfectly timed way. The problem, of course, as a man with your distinguished academic background, Herb London, knows so well, is that we will wind up paying the piper vastly more for weakness than we would by being strong and defending ourselves. Herb London, thank you. Join us again, please, very soon. And I hope all of you will as well.
It's a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for your extraordinary work.
Thank you. Same time, same station tomorrow for more of what you need to know to secure your freedom and that of those you love. This is Frank Affney. In the meantime, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.